Welcome to Growth Marketing Today, where marketers, designers, and product owners level up their growth marketing chops from experts in today's top startups. Here's your host, Ramley John.
Hey, welcome to the very first episode of 2021. This is your host, Ramley John, and I am excited. I have so much in store for you this year. I've already set my goals, my plans, my vision board for this year. I have so many things in store for you. If you don't already follow me on Twitter at Ramley John, on LinkedIn. I will be announcing all of this stuff that I'm working on going forward. And I hope you have your plans and your vision set for whatever you have in store for this year. I'd love to hear them. Send me an email, ramley@growtoday.fm, or find me on Twitter or LinkedIn. Really, really love to hear them. Just reply back to any emails that I sent you. Today, I have something special for you, somebody special for you. I wanted to start off this new year, and I had Alex Shapiro. When I started this podcast 3.5 years ago in 2017, he was one of the first ones I actually reached out to be on the show, because I know he knows his stuff about growth marketing. He's been in several startups doing growth marketing, Fluentiv, Indochino, and Helpful, and he's a self-professed startup growth junkie. And unfortunately, at that time, I couldn't release that episode because he changed his job. He told me, Ramley, hold on that episode. I just got a new gig. A call came to him, and Alex ended up as the director of growth marketing at Clio, a fast-growing scale-up company now with over 500 employees. So when he pitched me this idea, I really couldn't hold back on it. He said, what if I compared with you the difference between growth marketing in a startup versus a scale-up? Now, you don't really think about it. We think about growth marketing as just this thing, but really there could be many differences between what it looks like in a startup where you're probably doing a lot of things on your own versus a scale-up where now you have 500 employees at a company. Where do you fit in? And that's what I talk to Alex about in this episode. What a great way to start off this year. In this episode, you'll learn first the challenges and benefits of joining a scale-up as a growth marketer. Second, how to be successful as a growth marketer in a fast-growing scale-up company. And third, common pitfalls to avoid when transitioning from a startup to a scale-up. Before we jump in, I've created a free growth cheat sheet with all the actionable tips from this episode in a one-page PDF. Now, why take notes about this podcast when you can just steal mine, take all the good stuff that Alex shares in this episode and download it in that one-page PDF. Go to growtoday.fm/124 to get it now. You can also find this link in the description of the show. Get it now before I take it away, because after I publish the next episode, I do take away this week's cheat sheet and it will be gone forever. I also want to thank those who made this episode possible. Now, this folks help cover the cost of hosting and marketing tools so I can focus on getting amazing experts that you and I can learn from. Thanks to Camille and 42 Agency. Now, Camille and his team works with high-growth B2B SaaS companies, helping them build and scale revenue and marketing operations that really accelerates demand generation and pipeline growth. To learn more and get $500 in free consulting time, visit them at growtoday.fm/42, that's the number 42, or find that link in the description. Well, enough about me, let's jump in my chat with Alex. Hey everybody, I am excited to finally have Alex again. I recorded an episode with you 3 years ago. We were just reminiscing how you were actually one of my first few episodes, but you made some transitions in your career that you asked me to hold off on that episode, but I'm glad to have you back, Alex.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. It's been amazing to see your progress and seeing how the podcast has grown over the last 3 years. And I'm excited to come to you and hopefully share some really interesting stories.
Yeah, I know we're going to talk about it, but you've been with Clio as Director of Growth Marketing for 2 years now. And we were just chatting about it, how you've achieved the things that you wanted to achieve, probably even more. But I don't want to get ahead of myself. Usually start off by warming up my guests, and one of the things in your life is you're a new father. Congrats. How has having a newborn daughter, a newborn child been like in the last few weeks?
Well, it's our first. She's 10 weeks old right now, and I've never been happier or more tired at the same time. I certainly have a new appreciation for what it takes to balance both of those things. And I'm also excited. I think so much of my identity has been focused around my work over the last decade. And I'm excited for that now not to be the only thing, right? To really have other priorities that even go above work sometimes.
That's fascinating you say that. Like usually people in tech, their identity is attached to their job. Do you feel like now it's 80% is now on your identity is based on, like, I'm not asking for a percentage, but like how much has it shifted?
I think it's a shift in terms of resources and priorities. So if I think about my work, the expectations have not gone down. In fact, if anything, they're bigger than they ever have. But the amount of energy that I can put into it has definitely gone down. I have more energy that needs to go into supporting her and making sure that she survives and grows and thrives. So it's really about being more efficient and being smarter with how I spend my time and my resources. And I think even reflecting back on what it was before she arrived, it felt like I just had so much time. And now I have to be really smart about how to balance those things so I can be successful both at home and at work.
Interesting. I'm taking this as tips. Joanne and I have been married for 2 years, and like 2021 is the year we're planning to have a child. And I'm going to hit you up for advice.
Hopefully, I actually know something about that by when that time comes.
Oh, man. You're going to have a good year and a half head start over me. I think that's the thing I find is like you just have to know a little bit more than the guy beside you, whether that's with a child or when it comes to growth. I want to transition now and let's talk about growth. You have a really interesting career path so far. Can you talk a little bit about your journey so far? You've been 3 years now in this massive scale up with Clio, leading the growth marketing function. But we were chatting about topics here, but you actually didn't start off there. You've really been in the startup world.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I've always described myself as a startup junkie. I got very lucky. I got exposed to the internet and websites and marketing when I was a high school student. I launched my first website and we had 10 visitors and 100 and 1,000 and 10,000, 100,000. And it was so easy. And it just gave you this confidence saying, okay, like, you know, the internet's easy, marketing's easy, let's do this. Of course, the truth is it's never that easy, right? But what I loved about startups was, you know, I often felt like a misfit and I didn't have the traditional background in many ways. And I loved what startups didn't really care what your background was. It was just about what you brought to the table. And whatever, you know, everyone was in the same playing field and you were just judged on the effort and energy and attitude that you brought every day. So that environment always appealed to me. I started out in e-commerce growing up in Vancouver at a company called Indochino, which was really successful. And I was employee 10 there. And I really fell in love with marketing and with e-commerce. And I got some really, really great advice there. Like my first really great marketing advice, which was, if you want to do well in marketing, be as close to the revenue as possible. And my colleague Omar told me that. And still, I hold that advice so dearly today, you know, more than a decade later. And shortly after, I moved to Toronto and I wanted to try out B2B. And it turns out I love B2B even more. And I really fell in love, not just with driving revenue, but being a partner to a sales organization driving revenue. And that felt just as exciting for me. And I got exposed for the first time to this term called demand generation. I didn't know what it was. I just thought it was marketing. So I went from marketing to demand generation, now growth marketing. But it's always been about finding ways to grow. Whether it was at Indochino or Influitive or other early stage startups, I always sort of focused on that very, very early time. You know, 10 employees, 20, 40. The biggest we got at Influitive was we went from 40 to maybe 180 employees. But I always thought to myself that the place for me was at that very, very early stage environment where it was not very defined, where it was very scrappy. And that's part of why I'm excited to talk to you today, because I've spent the last 3 years at Clio at a company that was 280 employees when I joined, 500 employees today, raised more than $250 million of funding last year. And I think this stage is actually way more interesting to me as a startup junkie. And thinking about scale and working at a scale up versus a startup has been just a really interesting experience, and one that I think shattered a lot of my preconceived notions about what that would be like. That's really something that's really changed some of my perceptions about the role that growth marketers have, and almost maybe this bias that I had previously about not wanting to work at a larger company, and realizing that maybe that wasn't true for me.
Let's talk about that preconceived notion. I personally have, you know, I call myself a startup junkie as well. I don't know if I can imagine myself working for a larger organization, more than 500. Think about, you know, some of the preconceived misconception I might have is bureaucracy, and you know, you have to deal with so many teams, and if I have to want to launch an experiment, it's going to take me months. But for you, you seem like you're loving it. Like, you're really loving it. Like, how has the experience been, and what were some of those busted preconceived misconceptions that you actually destroyed in while working and leading growth marketing at Clio?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely differences around maybe the pace of how decisions are being made, and there's definitely a difference in terms of the buy-in that's required to make certain decisions. But I think there's a core kind of factor that goes into that thought process, and part of that is this idea that when you're at a startup and things aren't going well, or things haven't been figured out yet, it's really easy to pivot and say, let's try this, or let's fix this thing, it's clearly broken. Now imagine the thing you're trying to fix or improve is actually going pretty well, or you've already started doing it. That's a very different challenge, right? Starting from the beginning, or taking something that's clearly broken versus having something that actually works. And that's the difference at Clio, is we're taking things that are actually working, and we're starting with fixing those. So it's a different type of problem that you're solving. And it doesn't mean that we don't have a lot of room to continue to rebuild and optimize and change. Absolutely, we have to do that. But the reason why there's more thought that goes into it is because the business is more complex, and there's more established that we need to break apart or really rethink when we do want to implement or make changes.
That really makes sense. And let's talk about that pace in terms of decision-making. Like you break things and you ask for forgiveness later, which is something you probably can't do at Clio. But like, what is that? How is that decision-making process different? Maybe, you know, whether at Clio or other places you've seen where, you know, who do you need to get buy-in from, or like what kind of things do you need to do to actually launch like an experiment, or, you know, launch a campaign?
Yeah, I think it really depends. So first of all, I think we can launch things overnight. There's no question about it. There's lots of things that we launched very quickly. There's also even with COVID, we were able to pivot our business on a dime. Our whole team, 45 marketers, the whole company, we pivoted instantly, and we were able to really quickly adapt to that. So it doesn't always need to take time. But I think when you're trying to think about strategy, it does take time, because you're trying to articulate things in a really meaningful way. And what it really means, and I think both the early stage companies and at Clio, is it really means getting your ideas down on paper. It really means documenting your thoughts and your ideas. It doesn't matter if it's a small hypothesis or if it's a big project or initiative that you want to transform how the entire marketing and sales organization is going to run. It really requires more of that team effort to say, okay, what are we noticing? What is the hypothesis? What do we think is going to happen? How are we going to measure this? And however long it takes to put that together, for a small project, that could be 5 minutes, right? 10 minutes, and we can launch and quickly get going with that. For a bigger project, it might be months. So I think regardless of what stage you're working on, you know, strategy requires documentation and requires some time and buy-in to think through it.
That totally makes sense. And in terms of, you know, definitely with a larger organization, I'm guessing partnership is a key word, partnership with other functions. Can you talk a little bit about that? Like, how does that partnership, how do you work with other marketing directors, and how do you work with, you know, maybe the product team and the support team? I'm not sure. Like, how does partnership with other teams look like for your team?
Absolutely. Let me start with marketing first, because I think it's really interesting. So we have a 45 person marketing team. We're growing fast. We're hiring lots, and we're well resourced as a marketing team. We're driving about 70% of our revenue directly from marketing. So we're really kind of a driver of growth for the business. One thing that really surprised me when I got to Clio is I was in a new role as director of growth marketing. My function hadn't really been built out yet, and I got to build it up from scratch. And at first that surprised me. I was like, how is this team operating without growth marketing, without demand generation, and driving all this revenue? And as soon as I got there, I really understood what was happening. And the reality is, at Clio, on our marketing team, growth is everyone's responsibility. It wasn't just my own or my team. So what I found at being at a larger company is there's a lot more shared responsibility for growth and partnership between all the marketing leaders around that. So I thought that was really interesting because that actually has a huge impact, right? If you think about what my team does, and I report into our VP of marketing, and my team is very focused on new customer acquisition, mostly top of the funnel. And there's three main functions. There's demand generation, there's paid acquisition, there's international expansion. But other functions that I used to own in smaller organizations, my peers own those, right? Like, you know, whether partnering with our marketing operations team or our website team, our SEO team, our content team, product marketing, all those teams also see growth as their objective. So it doesn't feel like other places where I've worked where just demand gen or just growth has all the responsibility. Other marketers do other things. Here, there's a shared responsibility that's really driving that forward. The other thing that I think is so interesting at a scale up and something that's really taking me some time to get comfortable with, when you're at a smaller startup, you can see all the levers at once. You can see, okay, we're trying to do this, we're trying to do that. We're working on this piece of growth, this piece on product, this piece here. And with the company the size of Clio, you've got to be comfortable with knowing that you cannot see the whole thing. You can't focus on the whole thing. So at the early stage, you see everything. But here, we're thinking about growth in so many different ways. Different segments, different verticals, different products, different functions, different geographies, different channels. We've got product growth. We've got growth marketing, which is what I run. We've got different teams focused on going up market, going international, different products. And you have to realize, like, that means that all those people are thinking about growth. And myself, I can't know all those things. I can barely know a fraction of those things, right? I have to get really comfortable that I can't see it all. I got to focus on the part of the business that I'm trying to optimize and run for. And work collaboratively with the other folks that are running every other part of those growth levers and say, hey, we have a common strategy. We know what's going on, but I don't have the intimate details of some of the other growth plans. And really, we're relying on that partnership to understand, okay, there's lots of levers for us to grow.
That totally makes sense. Yeah, I can totally see that. Everything does fit into growth. It's funny how you said, like, you know, when you're a small startup, you do see the bigger picture. And now, like, you know, you might not be able to see the other levers. You were mentioning all the levers that you can potentially go for, and it seems like you're doing all of them as a team. But I'm curious, for you particularly, when they hired you as growth marketing, I'm guessing part of that was trying to figure out what growth marketing looks like at Clio. And now I'm sure you figured that out. How does growth marketing differentiate itself from like demand gen or product growth? Like, what is that niche or that space that growth marketing fits into the whole 500 person company at Clio?
Yeah, great question. So I would say there's two areas of responsibility. The first one is the function of what we're being measured on. And to me, that's really about driving net new customer acquisition. Clio is focused on the legal market, where we're focused on creating cloud-based solutions for law firms in the US and around the world. So what we're being measured on is how do we acquire new law firms, and really focusing on the paid acquisition and drive that forward. And that's very much like the tactical piece. But there's also the functional piece. And I think the thing that I'm really excited about, we just had an offsite this past week talking about it, which got me really excited, is our team sees ourselves as being the vector or the influence for experimentation in marketing. So yes, our function is to drive net new customers. That's how we do it. This is our role. So we're measured on. But the influence that we can create across not just our function, but the whole marketing team, is how do we be more experimental and more hypothesis-driven in our work. So the most exciting thing for me is not just the fact that we're achieving our successes and driving net new customers, but this idea of seeing other teams in marketing, whether it's product marketing or content team, use our hypothesis templates, use them to draft out their experiments, to thinking about that. And, you know, our role is to help make the entire marketing team think more data-driven and hypothesis-driven, and really drive that growth mindset across the whole marketing organization.
It's interesting. So you're more... Are you finding you're doing more education within the organization, like the marketing team, where like, okay, guys, this is like how you form a hypothesis, and you're more like a internal SWOT consulting
team, so to speak. Is that how you see your function as?
I don't see more consulting. I mean, obviously, we have a responsibility to help acquire customers. But I think what's exciting is our team is just so eager to learn. And everyone is so eager to share knowledge, share experiences, replicate things that are working in other parts of the organization. So it's actually been really fun. You know, we've got this marketing team that's really highly collaborative and they're hungry to learn. So that stuff comes naturally in our huddles and sharing experiences and docs and working together. Clio is by far the most collaborative marketing team that I've worked on, where by default, we want to involve all the stakeholders. We want to get people involved super early in the process. We want to say yes to how we're going to partner together. So that culture as a marketing team almost enables us to share ideas and share what's working across the organization.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. I totally see that. I want to talk a little bit more about that itself, about the teams and how you're also thinking about experiments itself. Like, can you run experiments on anything in marketing? Like, or you know, let's say somebody wants to do launch a really niche SEO landing page for this specific geography, or like doing ads, or like, do you have like mandates on where your team can experiment on? And you know, like, obviously you need boundaries. Like, I guess what I'm asking is, where are your boundaries in terms of experiments, or are there no boundaries at all?
Yeah, I don't think there's boundaries, but I think there's overlaps for collaboration. And how we think about our organization today is very much of a matrix function in marketing. So we've got almost three vectors. On one side, we've got segments. So we think about our business in terms of segments based on how big our law firms are, or where they're located geographically. So on that axis, we have segment owners, people in demand generation and programs for those segments. That's one piece. The second vector is channel owners, right? Someone who understands a channel, whether it's SEM or SEO or the website or other programs. So their job is to really understand those channels and use the segment expertise to inform those channels. The third bucket of people is they're the experts or specialists, and they're the designers or the web developers, the data scientists on our team. They're the ones that are injecting their really specific expertise into accomplishing the goals of our channels and our segments. So that matrix kind of helps us make decisions, understand where the boundaries are. And generally speaking, like, it's not a boundary, it's more so a place where there is collaboration. And that means, yes, a segment owner can go to a channel owner, or a channel owner can go to another channel owner, or we work together across initiatives that may be across channels or segments. But there's definitely, it's definitely very important to have individuals for each aspect of the business, whether it is a segment or a channel, even if there's a lot of influence involved, even if there's a lot of that you can't control because you're not responsible for the full results, you do need to have someone that is the main point person or the main contact for every part of the business.
Mm. I've heard you mention collaboration many times. I feel like it's a core part of the marketing team now that you mentioned it a few times. How does that look like, particularly, let's say somebody comes up to you, hey, Alex, I have this idea for an experiment. It's going to involve this segment and this channel and this specialist. Where do you go from there? Like, do you craft a hypothesis, pull everybody in that is related to that, and then get approval? Or like, what does collaboration look like once an experiment is on the go?
Yeah, I think it definitely starts with crafting hypothesis. We have a really simple hypothesis template. It's just one page. It's not trying to do anything overly complicated, but really just to say, yeah, get your thoughts down on paper and let's really flesh out that hypothesis before we go to other stakeholders. Let's make sure we know what we're measuring. We know what insights we're using to make that hypothesis. And as soon as we have that, then we would meet and we would say, yeah, let's, you know, does this make sense? Does this align with the priorities that we have across the other segments or channels? And then we figure out the right timeline that needs to happen for launching it. But I do think that kind of fleshing out that idea is a really, really important step that is key for taking those ideas and turning them into action. And one of the things that really is interesting about Clio to me is because of the stage that we're at and just the success that we've had as a business, there are so many ideas that every idea is actually a good idea. And we're not resource constrained. I'm so used to being in a startup where you're resource constrained. You don't have the budget for this, or you know this won't work because there's no product market fit, or you don't know all these things work. Once you have this amazing product market fit, you're not strained by resources. You're not constrained by them at all. So all of a sudden, every idea, every channel sounds awesome. And that actually makes it really hard, because where I think the real beauty happens and the real success happens, it has to come from prioritization like crazy. So I've never been in an environment where I have this many great ideas, this many great opportunities for Clio. And opportunities that I genuinely believe will work because of the fact that we have established product market fit. We have all these things in place. We have, you know, this brand equity and all these things that really make almost any marketing just fly, right? However, if we do all those things, none of them are going to work, right? It's really about how do you focus on the right ones and really prioritize. So I think if you think about that whole process you described about ideation to launch, probably the most important step after getting your hypothesis down is the act of prioritization and going back to those stakeholders and say, okay, is this more important than things that we're currently doing? Is it less important? And how does that rank?
Interesting. Okay. So it's the stakeholders are deciding, you know, maybe they have like key objectives for the year and they try to align it to those key objectives somehow. Is that how it works? Or like, are you using any other prioritization framework, like what Sean Ellis's ICE or like other prioritization frameworks? Or is it just totally based on what are our objectives this year and which ones will get us there quickest?
Yeah, that's how we're thinking about it more. We're not using any formal frameworks right now for prioritization, but it's really about challenging the team and being able to back that up and say, yeah, I do believe this is a better use of my time, this other initiative.
Is there like, I'm trying to get into this because it's fascinating. I've seen a Google where they do votes, like they vote with a sticky, or like is there any voting, or like what does that look like?
So there's no voting. What I've seen be successful at Clio is like someone just has to really believe in that thing. And it's almost like the champion method, maybe I'm going to call it. It's like someone's got to champion it. Like someone's got to really give a shit about that idea, that hypothesis, that concept, right? And if they do, then I've seen them push it forward. And the ideas that stay ideas for a long time, they haven't found the champion who's willing to say, yeah, this is worth my time, and go to you and say, it's worth your time, and here's why, right? And really build that case for why that looks like, and really feel like that responsibility to say, yeah, I've got this insight. I believe this is going to work. Let's do it.
When we come back in just a moment, Alex shares his tips to become successful at being a growth marketer in a scale-up. Just a quick thanks to our sponsor for this episode, 42 Agency. Now, 42 Agency works with high-growth B2B SaaS companies, helping them build and scale revenue marketing operations that accelerate demand generation and pipeline growth. They've worked with some amazing companies like OnFleet, HubDoc, GuestLogic, FlexDay, and more. And to top it off, I actually know the founder of 42 Agency, Camille Rexton, and he knows his stuff. So go reach out to him. He's actually offering a free $500 consulting time for Grow Today listeners. You can visit them at growtoday.fm/42 or find the link in the description. It'll redirect to this special offer. One more thing, don't forget to download the free growth cheat sheet for this episode. It has all the actionable tips from this episode in a one-page PDF. Why take notes when you can just steal mine? You can take all the actionable tips from this episode and apply it to your business to accelerate the growth even faster. You can find the link in the description of this show. Download it now before I take it away, because it'll only be up until next week. Enough about this, let's jump into my chat with Alex again.
Nice. Yeah, that totally makes sense. It's you really want to back it up, and somebody's really running with it. I want to move to the further down the step. You prioritize an experiment. It's approved. It's scheduled. It's going now. It's about to go. I want to go back to the collaboration piece, because I think that's where, you know, people in that different function, I'm guessing, have their own responsibilities that they day to day responsibilities they're already doing, and they're getting pulled into this experiment. How do you make sure that they focus their time on this collaborative, cross-functional, or cross-marketing team experiment versus like, oh, that's just my side experiment thing, and you know, I got to focus on this my day-to-day priorities instead?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think the most important thing is getting that buy-in. And thankfully, that's really easy to come by at Clio. Like, people are excited. And we're mostly a group of Canadians. We want to help each other. Like, the default behavior is, I want to help you. And that's been a really amazing part of our culture, especially as we've been distributed, obviously, for almost all of 2020. This idea of the default is, I want to help. And I think that kind of culture, when it exists in the marketing team, it really creates a lot of trust and opportunity for experimentation to happen. And yes, it might happen when you might go back to someone and say, I'm sorry, I can't help with this right now, or I need to push back by a week, or I'm too busy this week. But if your default is wanting to be helpful, that totally changes how that collaboration happens. And that's certainly how we think about our team and how our team behaves at Clio.
That makes sense. Okay. And when it comes to reviewing the experiments, that champion, I'm guessing, will go back to those subject matter experts and say, hey, what was the results? And they, I guess, report up to you or the VP of marketing. How does that work once you have enough, the experiment has enough data? How do you pull it back up to make sure that it's shared, that knowledge?
Yeah, so ideally the hypothesis doc is also the source of where the results live. So we're continuously updating that doc. And right below that hypothesis, and we had is actual results that we had, and mostly the learnings that we had from it. I think one thing that I really want to stress to my team is most of the things that we try should end up failing. And if that's not the case, that means that we're not trying things that are hard enough. So I think another really important part is like creating a culture where failure is good, because failure means we learn something, as long as we actually learn something from that process. And yeah, I think sometimes teams get too focused on having the goal to be a success, like the thing move the needle. That's the wrong goal. And if that's the goal that you have, you're going to end up doing things that are too easy, that are going to have really small impacts in the business, versus really trying the hard, difficult things that I think have an outsized impact overall.
That's good. Yeah, I totally agree with that. I love that. Failure is good. I think we learn more from when we don't achieve what we want versus like, oh, we succeeded, what's next? But so, you know, let's say something does work out, or, you know, something fails and you learn something. How is that, you know, you have this hypothesis doc with the learning. How do you make sure that the whole organization like knows that learning, or like it's like institutionalized or shared across the organization? Do you do like sound bites to the teams or other teams that they, you know, you might have an experiment that actually might affect the product team that, or the support team or something like that? I'm curious how that knowledge is shared from the experiments.
Yeah, it's a great question. It's actually an area that we probably haven't figured out yet in the marketing team. I am inspired by our product growth team. They've done a really good job of documenting all their results, and they use Confluence, and they actually publish like write-ups for all the experiments that they've done. And they're very detailed. They're public. They're really easy to read and access. So in fact, I just shared some of those templates with our team. And we had a session talking about actually doing that training for our marketing team as well, because I do think that's an area where we can be better at. And knowledge transfer is so hard, right? How do you retain that knowledge and those learnings, especially because many things that we're doing are things that we've tried in the past before, right? Clio's been around for 12 years. We've tried lots of channels, we've tried lots of experiments, but people have changed, roles have changed, times have changed, channels have changed. So I really think that that's a huge opportunity for us going into 2021.
Makes sense, yeah. That thing you shared, I'm not sure you even noticed, but I walked through the whole running a road experiment from like idea to completion to sharing that knowledge. I want to loop back and talk about the difference between startup and scale up growth. We've talked about the differences, but I want to talk a little bit about what remains the same and consistent. You know, whether you're in a startup, 5 people, 10 people, or you're in a scale up like Clio with, you know, over 500 folks now and growing massively, broad market fit. What remains the same for growth?
Absolutely. So first of all, there's lots of similarities. The biggest one to me is still the importance of customers and happy customers. And I can't understate that enough. When you're super early on, those early adopters, those advocates are just so critical for you to really understand your business, understand and be those ambassadors, people that trust you and are willing to take a chance on you, right? They're taking a chance, their career or their personal life on you in some kind of way. And it's amazing to me that clear up the scale that we're at right now, we have 150,000 professionals using us. I still believe that our customers are our single biggest competitive moat and our single biggest channel for growth. And when we survey our customers far and far away, number one reason that they chose Clio, recommended by a friend or colleague. And working for a company today, we have a really high NPS score, the highest that I've ever seen in B2B. It just really changes and really says, hey, that this has to be the focus. Like making your customers truly happy, making them advocates of your product, making promoters, nothing else is more important. And I would say that matters from a growth lever, both from an early stage and at a scale up. One thing that's also kind of remained the same, which I think is interesting, is attribution. I know marketers talk a lot about attribution. And attribution is hard when you're starting out and you don't have a lot of data. So coming to Clio, I thought, oh man, we have so much data. We have so many insights. We close, you know, hundreds of customers per week. We have a plethora of data and history and dashboards and reporting. Everything's available. It's still so hard. It's still so hard to understand and isolate what channels are making that impact. It's hard to isolate programs, and it's tough to measure progress. Even though you have your hunches, you talk to customers, you interview them, you understand what works, but it's really hard to say, okay, how does that relate back to making an investment in those channels or really driving that forward? Google eats up a ton of traffic. direct traffic is always such a huge portion of it. This word of mouth piece is really hard to measure. So it's funny, like one thing that's kind of surprised me, I definitely thought we would have attribution figured out in a way that was just so easy and straightforward. I don't think that ever gets solved. And you're always debating and trying to understand what the influence was. The other thing that I think is the same is the fact that it doesn't get easier. And at the early stage, sure, I've been at startups where every week you think it's the last week, right? Every week you have so many highs and lows that you literally think this is the end. And that's a really fun roller coaster to be on. I've never felt that at Clio. Obviously, we're at a stage where we're barely established. We've got never worried about our future. I've never once felt concerned or worried about Clio's future as a business. But guess what? Growth is hard. And especially when you're trying to grow at an unnatural rate. There's lots of companies out there that are trying to grow at 2% per year. And think about that as the denominator grows, right? If you're trying to grow 50% on $5 million, that's $2.5 million in a year. What about 50% on $50 million? That's $25 million. The denominator just gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and it doesn't get easier. You have to actually think bigger in terms of the impact and scale of the programs you've got to. So those are things that have been kind of the same. And there's definitely things that are different too. I mean, I've talked a little bit about the fact that I definitely shared that growth was everyone's responsibility, and that really surprised me and was really exciting to me. But there's two things I want to share that were really kind of different for me that I wanted to call out. The first one, when I got to Clio, I was actually really confused. I was confused because Clio is an amazing business. I love SaaS, unit economics and metrics and tearing down S1s. And I had never seen a business like Clio with incredible SaaS unit economics and just this beautiful business. But then I was really confused because I looked around our paid search and I was like, okay, it's just okay. I looked at our ads, I was like, oh, okay, our campaigns, okay, our SEO, our website, our CRO. And I was really confused. And I'm like, this is such a great business. We're driving so much success for marketing. Why are these things just okay? And I figured out the answer. And the answer has to do with product market fit. Product market fit changes everything. At the earliest stage, you don't have product market fit. So the only way you can grow is by unnaturally exploiting these channels and figuring out what channel is going to help you grow and sustain yourself despite having product market fit. When you have product market fit, like Clio does, everything works. You don't need to have unnatural channels. You don't need to have unnatural pieces, right? Like right. The foundation is in place. And as a marketer, I know I'm never going to work somewhere else where either I don't have product market fit to the level that Clio does, or I don't think I can get there. But it just helps you understand that, hey, it creates that foundation that you can build off of where every channel is successful, every channel works. And the potential for each channel is 100 times higher. And that's why we're only scratching the surface, because we haven't figured out that stage yet, because our potential is so much higher because that foundational piece is there. I think the other thing that stands out to me is brand. And I know there's a lot of talk about brand versus growth marketing and demand gen versus brand, all that stuff. And I got to tell you, I've never appreciated brand as much as I do here at Clio. And being at a later stage startup, right, at a scale up, we have dozens and dozens of competitors. And guess what? They copy every little thing that we do. If we have new taglines, they're going to copy it. If we have a new website header, they're going to copy it. We started using client-centered as part of our messaging this year. Within weeks, every single other legal practice management software is talking about being client-centered. So it's really hard to differentiate from that standpoint. So how do you differentiate? Well, brand is this thing that is this incredible competitive moat for us. And we're really fortunate we have a marketing-driven lens, a marketing-driven CEO, where we've thought about brand and thought leadership from the beginning. We've invested in some really key properties. One is our Clio Cloud Conference, which is the biggest conference in legal technology. And that thing is a massive investment of time and resources. But wow, it creates this brand experience for our customers and for the industry that just can't be replicated. The second thing we do is this thing called the Legal Trends Report. And we take anonymized data from within inside of Clio, and we create insights based off of that that we share with the legal industry. And it's unlike anything else in the legal industry, because every other piece of data is a survey. And guess what? People lie on surveys all the time, especially lawyers. So when you have the real data from inside the practice management software, it's very different from the survey data. And we've been doing this for 4 years now. We keep sharing these really insightful, groundbreaking results and data. And guess what? It's a ton of work to put together. All the data science and content and writing and design and the thought process and research and surveys. But it creates a brand that no one else can compete with. And it's amazing to see what kind of lift a brand creates and how much it's harder it is for our competitors to copy that. Because when you've established trust in that way, it's really, really hard to overcome that.
So good. Thank you for sharing all of that. I really do appreciate it. I think that's, it's fascinating. You're right. You've been in these two worlds and you have a better viewpoint to the similarities and differences. I want to shift gears and talk about you particularly. When they hired you, there was already a marketing team. You were the first growth marketing team person in Clio. And for a lot of people, that's scary. And it's usually a recipe for disaster when you hire this growth marketer guy from the startup world, and he's going to bring the silver bullet or the magic to the team. You turned that around, and you know, obviously things turned out really well. What contributed to your success? And this could also be your advice for anybody who is in a startup growth marketing role and they're looking to move up to the scale up. What are the things that you did early on really well that contributed to your success, or what other people in Clio that helped you succeed?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, first of all, I never thought that I would be here giving you a podcast interview about how much I'm enjoying being at a company. And frankly, being at a company for this long. So I'm approaching 3 years in January, Clio. It's the longest it ever lasted, right? And so many people that we know at startups, 12 months, 18 months, maybe 24 months, right? You bounce around.
Right.
And I never thought that not only would I be somewhere for 3 years, but I'm actually learning more now than I ever have. And the rate of learning has accelerated. And I think the biggest thing that I had to apply and understand is having a long-term outlook. And I went in and thinking, okay, it's going to take me 3 months tops to get going. And I'm going to be killing it, making an impact. It's going to be amazing. But guess what? It takes longer. It took me about 6 months because of the complexity of the business to really understand what was going on. 12 months before I was making an impact, I was hiring my team from the beginning. So, you know, almost 24 months before they understood what they were doing after they were hired, and going through that cycle. So that's the thing that's interesting. Like, I'm 3 years in, I feel like I'm just getting started. I'm learning more than ever. And I love Jason Lemkin and his SaaS quotes, but there's one that like stands out to me so much, and it's never resonated as much as it does now. The quote is very simple. He says, stay at least 1 year to learn, stay at least 2 years to grow, stay at least 3 years to count, stay at least 4 years to run a big part of the place. And being at Clio and seeing just the amazing business that we have, I realized I was leading startups when I was still in the learning and growing phase. But to really count, to really run a big part of the place, to have the impact that you want to, you got to be there longer. You got to understand that. And Clio has created this amazing culture where we have many employees who have been there for 10, 11, 12, 8, 9 years. Like, people are here for a while because they see that opportunity. They see that growth. They see that learning continuing. And it's not the typical startup curve where things start off exciting and new and then they get boring. They're really, that potential to grow continues there. I think the second thing that I think is understanding is, and it's very related, is for me at Clio, it's the idea of thinking differently about where I want to be going and thinking about where my head seems to be. And so much of growth is about today. What am I doing today? What am I doing tomorrow? What's hitting my number this week or this quarter? And my boss, Reagan Adol, she's challenged me so much from day one. She said, Alex, you know, I need you to be thinking 18 to 24 months out. And my first reaction to that was, I don't usually last 18 to 24 months at a company. Like, how am I supposed to think about that time frame? But if I'm thinking at that level, then my team can be thinking, you know, 6 to 12 months out. And if they're thinking at that level, then they can collaborate and think ahead and really prioritize and put in those work and really driving that forward. And that's really been valuable to me because I realized at Clio, there's almost two kinds of ways that we grow. The first one is the 1% incremental improvements, getting 1% better every single day. We have lots of that across the business, across many channels, little tweaks that you don't notice, but over the course of many, many days they improve. But the second thing is you gotta make big changes to your go-to-market. You gotta overhaul your strategy. You gotta be thinking about, you know, big, meaty projects. We've done a couple of those while I've been at Clio, and they're really interesting to work on. And you can't get those unless you're thinking 18 and 24 months out. You can't build a team that you want to unless you're thinking to that lens. So I think the biggest thing for me has been having that longer-term outlook, both in terms of my career, but also where I need to be thinking about to make our team successful, to achieve the goals that we have and the ambitions that we have as a business.
That totally makes sense in terms of time. Early on as well, I'm guessing collaboration. You mentioned collaboration so many times, but I'm guessing that's also a big part that of your success is making sure that you don't work in silo. I was talking to Anush Adia. He's like VP of growth at Sophia. And he said like one of the worst things a growth marketer can do is do their thing on the side and then not involve anybody else because like that's their thing. But obviously that's not what you did. Collaboration is key to Clio. Has that also contributed a big part to your success, making sure that you're not in silo and in solo mode?
Absolutely. And I think the marketing collaboration is a huge part of it. But the one that I really want to talk about is that sales partnership side. And the thing that I'm most proud of at Clio is having really driven that partnership with our sales organization. We have a really collaborative sales and marketing team because the part that we work on, the funnel, drives 70% of our revenue. We rely on each other a lot. I like to say that if a sales rep has a bad month, there's 100 other sales reps that can make up for it. But if marketing has a bad month, all 100 sales reps will have a bad month, right? Because of how much demand we're driving inbound. So there has to be a super strong partnership. And I was very lucky when I first joined Clio, our VP of sales, Steven Silverback, was our VP of sales at the time. He actually said, Alex, I'm going to invite you to my direct reports meeting. And every week you're going to be part of that. And he said, he had one condition. He said, you're not allowed to tell anyone, even your boss, anyone in marketing, about anything that happens at that meeting. But I want my team to feel like you are part of our team. I want you to feel like you're part of it. And that really set the tone. And even today, you know, 3 years later, we've got amazing partnerships with sales. And to me, that's what I love about B2B marketing is that partnership. And revenue doesn't come by itself. It has to be in partnership with each other. Nothing good or meaningful that we can achieve at Clio to drive growth is going to come from just our growth team itself. It has to have partnerships with sales or other stakeholders in marketing or business operations or revenue or systems. And, you know, that could be a scary thought. You could say, well, I can't make the impact that I want to by myself. Yes, that's true. Or you can say when you do partner with the right people, the level of impact you can make is an order of magnitude or two orders of magnitude than you had before. I think that's a really important lens, but I've been grateful that the partnerships that we've had at Clio, and again, that mindset of being open and wanting to help and saying, yes, and I want to help you, has always been part of that culture.
And I'm guessing during It seems like the whole collaboration and partnership was already embedded into Clio's culture, right? And that made it easy for you. Is that something you made sure of when you were in the interview process? Like, it would have probably been really, really hard to be successful as a first growth marketing hire if nobody was talking to anybody, right? But I'm guessing that's what you check to make sure that piece was there, that whole collaboration, because it is a bigger organization and growth marketing does, it is a cross-functional. It does affect multiple teams.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I've actually hired a few people on my team that have come from smaller startups and even, have come from, one person or two person marketing teams and have made a really successful adjustment to Clio. And the ones that have been most successful, they're embracing that. And they're realizing, hey, I can go from being the smartest person in the room that I'm in currently to being in a room with a lot of smart people. And part of the responsibility of being in that room with a lot of smart people at Clio involves partnership and collaboration and being vulnerable and saying when you don't know and asking for help. And in all my career as a marketer, I've oscillated between two different types of roles. Either I'm part of a small marketing team or I'm the only marketer. Small marketing team, only marketer. I did this jump 5 years before I came to Clio, where I'm part of a big team. And guess what? If I look back now, every time when I was part of a marketing team, my career exploded and I learned a ton. Every time that I was learning by myself, it was more stagnant. And I think that's a mistake that a lot of young marketers make, right? They'll go to the place that maybe offers more pay or has a nicer title, but you're lonely, you're by yourself. And marketing is a team sport. And to be really successful, to drive growth, you need to be part of a team. And that's been really exciting for me, seeing that, hey, at Clio, it's actually the biggest marketing team I've been part of. We have 45 people in marketing. We're adding about 20 headcount in marketing next year. That's 65 people I'm going to learn a ton from. And that to me has created the best possible environment for my learning and for my team as well.
It's so good. I'm going to start wrapping up. We're about to hit our hour of chatting about this. It's really been fascinating. Just two more questions. The first one, we have talked about so many things. Thank you for sharing all this experience that you have. But if you can just give one or two pieces of advice, just to summarize, whether it's something that we've already talked about or something that is still in the back of your mind, for any growth marketers and startups who are looking to join scale up, and by the way, Clio is hiring, so people are interested in this. They can you probably can plug that in later. But what would be your one or two piece of advice to those growth marketers?
Yeah, I think my biggest piece of advice is don't be scared, and don't be scared about being in a bigger company with a bigger team, and maybe not having as big of a title as you would have by yourself in a smaller company. The scale and impact of your work is going to be so much better. You'll be supported by a better product, better product market fit, by a stronger brand. And if you have those foundations in place, it's going to make your marketing a heck of a lot more fun, especially if you've got those resources in place too. And it's almost like opening up your opportunities. And you're going to go from someplace that's really resource constrained, people restrained, budget restrained, product market fit constrained, to these vast opportunities. To me, that's a really fun playground, and I'm having a ton of fun thinking about this playground. One other piece of advice I want to talk about, which I talk to lots of young marketers all the time, and I think this is a really common challenge in our industry, is around career paths. And regardless if you're at a startup or a scale up, people in marketing have this perception around people management and about going down a people manager path. And I can't stress enough, just having gone down that path, of just how different it is to go down the leadership and people management path from being a marketer who's driving growth and really being at the forefront of it. And when we start out in marketing, it's all about the campaigns, the initiatives, and the hypothesis, and doing it ourselves. And I love it. But to be a people leader, it's so different, right? I sit in meetings all day. I spend a ton of my time recruiting and hiring, mentoring, coaching, unblocking. I spend not a lot of time doing marketing and a lot more of my time enabling my team. And I want to be clear that it's not the only path. And I feel like too many marketers think that it's the only path or are in positions where they think it's the only path. You know, if you think you're interested in it, certainly you should try it and give it a shot and be in an environment where you're going to have professionals who are going to help support you as a manager and figure it out, because you're going to make so many mistakes as a young manager, just like I've made. But it's not the right choice for everyone. And I really want people to think about those as two different tracks. There's a track around people management. And if you think that your excitement and fulfillment in your career is going to come from enabling other people to be successful, that's a path for you. But it's very different from the marketing, growth marketing path of really being at the forefront of the experiments and ideas and the campaigns. And it's perfectly okay to be an expert that's driving growth down that path without being a people manager. And I want more companies, just like Cleo is doing, to adopt both paths and say, hey, you can choose either or, you can try either or. You don't have to be a VP or director of growth or director of whatever and manage a large team to be successful. You can do that as an individual contributor, or you can go down this other path around people and enabling them. And there's no, one's not better or worse. But I think that's a really important thing that a lot of marketers are not thinking about very much as part of their career. And I encourage them to think about that more.
That's so good. Good piece of advice. And just final question. Do you have any call to actions or plugs for this? Where can people find out more about you, growth marketers who are interested in checking out Cleo or maybe even applying for any open roles that you have? Where can people go to check that out?
Yeah, Cleo.com, CLIO.com. Definitely check us out. We're hiring lots of roles across a ton of different functions, mostly in Canada, but other places as well too. You can follow me on Twitter, Alex Shapiro, one word on Twitter. Looking forward to connecting with everyone. I love talking to young marketers. Hit me up, send me a note, and looking forward to seeing your successes. And Remy, it's been such a pleasure seeing your successes and seeing your growth over these last 3 years. And kudos to you and to the podcast. Thank you so much for having me on here.
Thanks, Alex. I appreciate it.
That's it for this episode. I want to remind you that I also created a free growth cheat sheet with all the actionable tips from this episode in a one-page PDF. Seriously, just take all the stuff you learned from Alex and download it now. Go to growthtoday.fm/124 to get it now, or you can find the link in the description of the show. And before I end, I also want to thank the sponsor of this episode. 42 Agency works with high-growth B2B SaaS companies, helping them build and scale revenue and marketing operations that accelerate demand generation and pipeline growth. To learn more and get $500 in free consulting time, visit them at growthtoday.fm/42. Please also support me this three easy ways. First, you can share a quote or share this episode on Twitter or tell a friend about it. It's really how this podcast like this grow. Second, you can join the Grow Today mailing list. You'll get the cheat sheet directly emailed to you every single time, so you don't have to keep asking for it from me. And third, leave a review on Apple Podcasts. I really would appreciate it. That's how people can find out more about this show on that platform. Well, that's it for this episode. Have an amazing 2021. Until the next episode, this is your host, Ramley John. Keep safe, and as always, keep on growing. Passion.